Okay, so thank you. First of all, I want to thank the organizer for inviting me, and especially to put my talk at the end of the conference, because so I can survive the jet lag, but still I'm fighting against the jet lag. So the main goal of my talk will be to arrive at the end of the talk. The second goal of the talk is to discuss about turbulence and turbulent acceleration in galaxy cluster. And the motivation is essentially given by observations that why we want to study turbulent acceleration and kinetic processes in galaxy clusters, because radio astronomers are telling us that galaxy clusters and the intracluster medium, that is the here is X-rays, the color. So the intercluster medium also produce synchrotron radiation, non-thermal radiation in the form of radio halos, relics, and whatever. So the main argument here is that for some reason, relativistic particles, GV at least relativistic particles, and magnetic fields should be generated in the intracluster medium on megabarsec scales. And the acceleration or reacceleration should be on in situ reacceleration in these systems. Now, I will focus on these beasts that are called the radio halos, and this is essentially the outline of my talk. The first part is the turbulent acceleration in radio halos. I will try to give an overview of what we do not understand and do not understand about radio halos, with a connection with things that we have discussed during this conference. So kinetic process and so on. And the second part, I will give some news about the discovery of gigantic radio bridges, and again, possible interpretation through turbulent acceleration. So radio halos, what are these radio halos? These are the biggest radio sources that we have in the universe. So essentially are megabarsec scale synchrotron radiation that are found in galaxy clusters. And observations also tell us that they are typically found in merging systems. You know, galaxy clusters form through accretion of matter and merging of substructures. And where there is this dynamical activity in galaxy cluster, we statistically or usually see radio bright or radio, radio halos. In the case of less dynamically active systems, these systems are radio fainter or radio quiet. We don't detect in many cases radio halos. So there is something connected with the process of formation and mergers in galaxy clusters, and the model that was proposed more than 10 years ago is the reacceleration model, turbulent reacceleration models. In this model, essentially, you assume that during mergers, you have generate turbulence, and in some way, your turbulence dampen to your particles and to your magnetic field and generate the observed synchrotron radiation. So essentially the chain is the following. You have an energy flux of your turbulence, some kind of efficiency. This goes into heating and acceleration of your particles, and then you produce the radiation. So you have the thermal plasma, that is the red one here, the old relativistic plasma. The relic relativistic particles, typically we believe that there are clusters are full of relativistic particles at energies of few MeV or something. And then when you have a merger, you reaccelerate the system from dashed to solid lines, essentially, and you produce in this cartoon radio bright plasma that essentially is GeV or few GeV electrons in order to radiate the synchrotron radiation that you see. Okay, so if you check the energetics in this model, essentially this can be done by numerical simulation, cosmological simulation. Many people have done this. This is the evolution of energy flux or dissipation of turbulence that is measured in clusters in numerical cosmological simulations, and you see these bumps with redshift. So this is the time scale from redshift 1 to redshift 0, and you see three mergers, and all these mergers are associated with an increase of your turbulence and dissipation of your large scale turbulence. And typically the luminosity of your turbulence is 5 orders of magnitude above the synchrotron luminosity that you observe in radio halos. So the conclusion is, okay, there is room to play with these effects and to use the turbulence and a tiny fraction of turbulent energy flux in this system. The big challenge here is that energy should be transported from the megaparsec, cosmological scales, down to small scales, where energy is the electromagnetic scale or whatever, is essentially coupled with the non-thermal plasma and with the magnetic field amplification. So there is a hierarchy of complex mechanisms, magnetic effects, that should be working in this system. And this is the big challenge. Now, the other point here is that essentially when we play with turbulent acceleration, we are playing with kind of second-order Fermi mechanisms. And you know very well that these mechanisms are very slow compared to first-order or other kind of mechanisms. And if you take the acceleration time classical Fermi formula, so there is the scale of your turbulent motions divided by the velocity of your motions, and the acceleration time scale, that is the acceleration to accelerate particles at a given energy, is essentially between 10 megayears and 1 gigayears long. It's very long, but for us that study this system is good, essentially, because we can wait a lot of time. Under these conditions, this mechanism is not able to accelerate very high energy particles, of course, can accelerate few GeV or 10 or maybe 100 GeV particles, because of the competition with radiative losses. All the electrons lose energy due to a synchrotron and inverse contour radiation that we also measure with observations, the synchrotron at least. And so the system accelerates particles from an initial spectrum to another a final spectrum where the acceleration is essentially balanced by radiative losses. And this balance happens at some energy, and from this you can calculate which is the maximum frequency of the synchrotron radiation that you produce in your system. And this maximum frequency scales with the acceleration time scale, again, these beasts, to the minus 2. So if you accelerate with a time scale that is of the order of 400 megayear, you just produce a synchrotron radiation at 1 gigahertz, or around 1 gigahertz, so in the radio band. So the idea was many years ago, okay, let's assume that acceleration time is shorter in the case of big mergers, more energetic events, you have more turbulence, so less acceleration time shorter, so frequency larger. And so you have essentially this kind of, this is a cartoon of the radio spectrum of radio halos that you can imagine. This is the synchrotron spectrum. So this is the cartoon for essentially big phenomena, energetic phenomena. So you can produce radiation up to relatively high frequency. But in the universe, the smaller merger are more common than the big ones. So you can expect, based on this extrapolation, that you should produce also radio halos with a frequency, with a maximum frequency that is much smaller, much smaller, much smaller. And essentially, if you look at this frequency, you will detect only preferentially the most energetic phenomena. If you go to lower frequency, you can also detect less energetic phenomena. These are called steep spectrum or ultra steep spectrum radio halos. And this was a prediction, unique prediction of this kind of modeling or scenario that was on the desk for maybe 10 years or so. It triggered also the interest of radio telescopes, of people doing radio telescopes, new generation of radio telescopes, in particular the LOFAR, that is the biggest radio telescopes that now operate at low frequency, so is able to look at this frequency where we expect a lot of diffuse emission, and is a radio telescope spreading it over across the whole Europe, essentially. It's the biggest SKA pathfinder. The SKA is the future radio telescope, going to very low frequencies. And we know today, although the emission, the observations are still, I would not say starting, but clearly we have observed only a very limited number of the sky, that yes, these beasts that are predicted by this scenario exist. This is a number of objects that have very steep spectrum and that have been predicted in that is in this by this scenario. Of course, the only things that we know is that they are pretty common, but there are not yet statistical studies to understand how common are with respect to radio halos with flatter spectrum. So we are going to detect typically, this is a clear example. You see here a diffuse emission with the GMRT at 600 MHz. Nothing is visible around the cluster. And when you go to with low far at 100 MHz, you see a megaparsec scale emission. And the spectrum that you can estimate from these observations is steeper than -2 or so. So extremely steep. Okay, these are the good news. Now there are the bad news, or I would say the beautiful of this cartoon. Yeah. So essentially what we want to do is to transport in order to accelerate particles turbulence from very large scale to small scales. And this is a cartoon of what we believe is turbulence in galaxy clusters. So you have, this is a turbulence spectrum versus scale. At very large scale, you have a degeneration of turbulence due to cosmological motions, megaparsec scale. This is hydroturbulence, because the turbulence in galaxy clusters is superalphenic. So the motions at these scales essentially are not sensitive to the presence of magnetic field. The magnetic field is simply advected, tangled by this motion. So this is hydroturbulence. At some point in the turbulent cascade, you encounter this scale, that is the MHD scale, where the Reynolds stress of turbulence is the minimum scale where the Reynolds stress of the turbulence is able to bend the magnetic field lines, essentially where the velocity of your turbulence is equal to Wolfram speed. Yeah, okay. So this is, and here you have the MHD case of turbulence. In the same time, you have also the case of the collisionless and collisional turbulence. So in this case, you are in on scales that are larger than the main free path, the classical main free path, Coulomb main free path that we know is probably not so relevant. And at smaller scale, the turbulence is collisionless. So there is a very complicated cartoon where you can generate essentially both compressive and solenoidal turbulent cascade that will be dissipated by some processes. But we also know that this plasma is weakly collisional and is high beta plasma. And we learn also from this conference that essentially they are very unstable plasma. So as soon as you trigger some instability, you can also generate modes at very small scales, like the Fyros turbulence, mirror turbulence, hybrid modes, whatever. Okay? These are very small scales. So for particle acceleration people, what you want to do is, I mean, you have two possibilities. Or you intercept this cascading and use the cascade of turbulence to accelerate particles, or you use these modes and let the plasma to transfer energy for you from large scale to small scales, and then you use this energy. So in literature, typically people do this, and this is probably for the future in this field, because it's of course much more complicated. So in the following two to three slides or so, I will show how the way we calculate turbulent acceleration in a simple cartoon, so using the cascading of compressive modes, depends on plasma conditions, and in particular on the effective main free path. So the cartoon is the following. This is the simplest way you can follow to accelerate particles. Suppose you have your spectrum of turbulence. This is the generation scale, the Alphen scale, and there will be a cutoff scale. So you have your energy flux of turbulence converted into plasma, into particles, and there is this energy is extracted from the turbulence and you have a damping of your turbulence and your turbulence spectrum. This is just balance. Okay. And essentially, what we do in this kind of modeling is to model the evolution of particles as a diffusion process in momentum space, as you know. So if you introduce the DPP, that is the diffusion coefficient, you have that, but essentially the eta, the efficiency, and the time acceleration time depends on DPP in this way. So what you want to do, your goal for theorists is just to calculate the DPP that you have done. I'm simplifying, but okay? And this has been done, for example, for transit time damping with fast modes a few years, several years ago in this environment. And there are also many people in this room, many, some people in this room that contributed to this field in particular. So this is the DPP, and the acceleration rate essentially depends on the minimum scale, on the fraction of energy that is available at small scales and the smallest scales, and to the minimum scale. So the game you play is to try to transport your turbulence energy down to the minimum possible scale and to use motion on this scale to accelerate particles as fast as you can. Still slowly, but as fast as you can in the context of Fermi second order. So how to calculate the minimum scale, which is the physics that determine the minimum scale? On one end, you have the damping of your turbulence. On the other end, you have the cascading time. So when the two time scales match, you have a cutoff of the turbulence and cannot transport turbulence to smaller scales. So in order to calculate this, you have to solve, plasma tensor, doesn't matter. So to calculate essentially the damping of your turbulence and the cascading time, typically, and this is bad probably in our exercise, you typically use or assume MHD as reference. It's difficult to have other possibilities. So there may be some uncertainties. We are just talking about orders of magnitude here, okay? So if you do this, you calculate this minimum cutoff scale, this one, and this depends on the damping coefficient to the minus 2, essentially. Now, what's this damping? And here it comes the microphysics of your plasma. There are two conditions. This is the damping as a function of pitch angle. Typically, you average the pitch angle, but this is just for fun. So you have two conditions. One extreme condition. In one case, the frequency of your wave is larger than the ion-ion collision frequency. This is typically the case where you are playing with Coulomb collisions. In this case, most of the energy is damped. Everything is collisionless. So most of the energy of your turbulence is damped into your thermal plasma. And a fraction of this remaining energy is damped into relativistic plasma. So the acceleration rate is low. And we have shown that and in these conditions, under favorable conditions where you have enough compressive turbulence in your plasma, in your cluster, you can generate eventually radioechoes. There is another possibility that has been discussed also during this meeting, that the ground plasma behave more collisional because of instabilities. In this case, essentially, most of the energy of the turbulence is not going into your thermal plasma, but in your relativistic plasma. And this is the case where the damping are very small, so you can produce a cutoff scale that is very small, and so the acceleration increase. Okay, just because most of your energy goes into relativistic instead of thermal, physically speaking. So during this conference, there were a lot of talks about effective collisionality or reduced Landau damping or whatever. I want just to pick up one result that Matt presented, that is the ion-ion frequency in case of Fyros. If you use this, essentially you can demonstrate that there is a scale, a transition scale, between that is of the order of LA beta plasma minus 1/2, where LA depends on your turbulence, is the minimum, is the MHD scale, so it's Mach number, half n Mach number to minus 3, essentially. And so for scales larger or smaller of these scales, you end up in this regime or in this regime. So we need to improve, essentially, the turbulent treatment, acceleration treatment, and to combine, essentially, with this kind of physics to understand the evolution of these systems and the acceleration rate. This is just to connect what we are doing, to connect two parallel universes, let's say. Okay. So this is the case of radio halos. In time, yeah. Surprisingly in time. And I'm going to discuss about now the radio bridges. What's new, really new in this area now? So in the last One year, and that's something strange happened with LOFER, because there was the discovery of gigantic diffuse emission connecting clusters. So radio astronomers are starting to detect diffuse emission on scales beyond galaxy clusters. These are the two examples. One is this Abel, a telephone number that, of course, 1758 maybe, but don't trust me, it's a telephone number. And there is two clusters that are going to merge. This is a pre-merger state. And you see or not probably diffuse emission in between them, and you see this diffuse emission now in the more deeper data. But the most striking case has been published in Science this year is the case of 401-399. There are two clusters that are going into a collision. The distance between them is about 4 megaparsec, coast to coast, and radio astronomers detect diffuse synchrotron radiation in this gigantic region. So the observers are telling us that essentially the magnetic field can be amplified to fraction of microgauss, at least, on scales that are beyond galaxy clusters, that GV or more energetic electrons can be reaccelerated on these gigantic scales, and that no obvious role is played by major merger in these cases, contrary to radio halos, just because the merger will happen in a few giga years. So the energy has not been dissipated yet by the merger. It's a pre-merging case. So this poses a problem of the origin of these systems. And so for this reason, we went to have a look at the simulation with Franco Vazza, that is a simulator. And simulator means in a good sense, I mean, playing with simulations. So this is the reality. This is the filament. This is the radio bridge. This is the X-ray emission from the two clusters. And this is the Sunia and Zeldovich signal collected by Planck, where you see this bridge that has a radio counterpart. So there is a density and temperature here. Density is 10 to minus 4. Temperature is 5 kV or so. So it's measured. And this is the simulation, the density from the simulation projected density. By chance, we had at home a simulation with the same system. Same masses, same dynamical status, same temperature, roughly speaking. And so we played a little bit with this simulation. And we went to check the turbulence in the simulation. And surprisingly, we found a lot of turbulence. This is the density. This is everything now is fake, is simulated, OK? So this is the projected density, and colors are the turbulent energy flux. So you see that there is a lot of turbulence. We know the origin of this turbulence because both clusters had a merger between two substructures 2-3 giga years ago. But then the two systems are moving, collapsing together at some velocity and will collapse, will merge in a few giga, 1 or 2 giga years. But you see all this turbulence that is produced here. And if you look at the energy flux of this turbulence, happen to be, again, 5 orders of magnitude larger than the energy that is the luminosity that is measured by radio astronomers in the similar system in the reality. And then 60% of this turbulence is solenoidal, 40% is kind of compressive turbulence. And the origin of this turbulence, of course, it was kind of unexpected to see a lot of turbulence in between clusters that still have to merge. But then you realize immediately that these situations occur in very high overdensity. Then there are substructures that fly in these bridges and that generate turbulence. So there are a number of possibilities that we verify with the simulation to see the generation of this turbulence. And so that we understand the origin of this turbulence in terms of cosmological signal of all the small structures that fall into this system, a big gigantic system that is collapsing altogether. So it's these are relevant time scales. We find the time eddy turnover time of your turbulent eddies of the order of 1 giga year or less. The dynamical time scale of this system is of the order of 1 giga year or two, so comparable just larger with respect to this editor over time. After that, the two clusters collapse. And then, and so the generation of turbulence is kind of sporadic driver. The driver is kind of sporadic, so you generate turbulence patchy here. Again, when you look at the similarity between the energy flux of turbulence from the fake world and the real universe, it's quite remarkable. So this kind of motivates us to check if this turbulence can be responsible for this signal. So first of all, of course, if you want to play with synchrotron radiation, you have to understand the magnetic field. And unfortunately, the simulations are unable to give you the true magnetic field in this system, simply because the resolution is not sufficient. So typically, 90% or more of the volume is as a resolution that is larger than the MHD scale. So you cannot play with dynamo. This was discussed in this meeting also. So what we did is just to play post-processing to understand, to generate a kind of reference magnetic field. Of course, you would like to have a simulation that do it for you, but. And so the playing with this means that essentially you assume that a fraction on the energy flux of solenoidal turbulence is damped into magnetic field in this simulation. So this is the initial magnetic field, and this is the magnetic field that is generated with this recipe, that is based on MHD turbulence simulations. So the magnetic field in this structure is found to be of the order of a fraction of microgauss. It means that whatever the mechanism will be to accelerate particles, most of the luminosity will be found in inverse Compton radiation and not in radio. So inverse Compton will be 20, 30 times larger than radio. But we cannot see the inverse Compton because of lack of enough sensitivity. So the final point is to use acceleration mechanisms and to accelerate particle and to check whether or not you can explain what you observe. So we use this mechanism that is based on solenoidal turbulence and assume that your particles fly through reconnecting region, dynamo region in a stochastic way, generating a second order mechanism. I don't have time to go into these details. Essentially, this is the acceleration, the DPP that you generate, the acceleration time that you generate, and you can use this mechanism combined with the flux, energy flux that is measured in your simulation to understand whether or not you can accelerate particles at energy that is larger enough to produce what you see. And this is the most important, in my opinion, plot in our work. That is, the PDF is not normalized. It's the number of cells as a function of acceleration time. And if your acceleration time is below a few hundred mega years, you have done. You can sustain the synchrotron radiation that you see. And indeed, you show that you can produce radiation in more than 50%, or roughly 50% of the volume, due to these mechanisms, acceleration by turbulence. And so this is a conclusion one. We have enough energy, we can produce, illuminate 50% of this volume in synchrotron radiation, and so it's very promising to explain this phenomenon. The very last part of the talk, I will jump now the formalism because I think we have a few minutes, so I want to go directly to the conclusion. That's okay, that's enough. Okay, so what you do is to use formalism, the standard formalism that we use for radio halos or for particle acceleration in turbulence, to use the turbulence you measure, use the magnetic field that you calculate in the simulation, solve Fokker-Planck for the distribution of acceleration time and the PDF, and calculate particle spectra and integrate everything. These are the typical particle spectra, doesn't matter, but just to show you. So this is the result. This is the synchrotron radiation that is predicted on a volume similar to what has been observed by observers. This is the radio data, the upper limit, and this is the inverse count. So roughly speaking, not only you can prove that the mechanism is fairly, let's say, natural or possible, but you can also produce order of magnitude the luminosity that is observed. Of course, we don't have the system that is observed in the simulation, so within a factor few, you have to make a comparison. And the final view graph is something that is even probably very interesting in my opinion. So in these models, you can calculate the maximum frequency that you generate due to the acceleration in your magnetic field. And there is a threshold that to generate radiation at a given frequency that depends on the turbulent velocity and on your model for magnetic field amplification. So what happens is that you produce immediately, you predict that the volume, that low frequency your radiation is very volume filling, because again, the conditions are satisfied, but at high frequency the emission is more clumpy and you are only sensible to the clumpy and to the more active turbulent region. And this is a more quantitative statement. This is referred to the blue spectrum. So this is the 85% of the volume, and this is the contribution from 15% of the volume. So if you observe at low frequency, you will see all these beasts coming up in terms of synchrotron radiation, glowing up in terms of synchrotron radiation. If you observe at a few gigahertz, you will only see some of these structures, probably the red structures. By the way, this is a clump, is removed from all this calculation. But that's it. So this is the take-home message for you, for both Radio Halos and Radio Bridge, and I'm ready to ask questions, to answer questions. Okay, thank you.
No questions.
So I have two questions, very interesting talk. So the simulation you actually showed was a triple merging system. So what was the mass ratio between this clump that actually has made it through this bridge and the other two clusters?
So the question is that in reality it's a four merger systems. It's even more complicated. Do you see here this? This is another clump. So the mass ratio between this clump, and the big ones is very small. It's 1 to 8, 1 to 10. So it's very small clumps. You should see the contours
right now,
that
is
the
after,
projected density.
This is after stripping, but
yes.
What was it before?
Before is 1 to 8, 1 to 9. So it's not very stripped because if you look in 3D, it is not going through the bridge, but is orbiting around the bridge. So it's not strongly stripped. And this one is more stripped, but it's just arrived in the system. So the question is this representative, this is your question, I guess, of the other system? So in the other system, this is a fake system, in the real system, there are evidences for complex dynamics. So the two clusters, in the real system, in the real life, because we want to do real life at the end. Okay, so this system and this system are post-merger. When you go to optical studies, there is a lot of debate here whether this was a post-merger or a pre-merger, because there is a lot of, and the debate concluded it is a pre-merger, but because there is a lot of dynamical activity in between the systems. So I don't know really if the two systems are compatible, but clearly we are on the same page, let's say. Okay?
And for me, the other question, so this is a very complicated physics you describe. Is there anything that
I didn't describe too much physics.
Is there anything you would make a true prediction how you can break your model?
So there was a which one? This one or the first one?
I mean, basically some aspects of.
Because I focused on to.
Specifically here, but also sort of in generally. I mean, does it need to be reacceleration? What are the seed electrons basically? I mean, there are certain predictions that come along with this model. For instance, I mean, I think the second model predicted. If you go to low frequencies, you become smoother. So if you get high resolution, low frequency.
High frequency.
So low frequency high resolution interferometers like SKA, and they start to resolve out these radio halos, then that your model will be in trouble, for instance, right?
Yeah, so let me describe this. So let's focus on these, and then we can go to the first one. I don't know what, because I guess we have time. So let's focus on this. Indeed, there are two strong predictions. One and three strong predictions. But this is a steep spectrum, let's say, it doesn't matter. So two strong predictions. One is this volume filling changing with frequency. This is a peculiar prediction of all turbulent acceleration models. It's similar to the case of ultra-steep spectrum radio halos that we did in the past. Same physics. So essentially, yes, there are observations that are ongoing now with LOFAR at low frequency, 150 megahertz, that will be 10 times deeper than the observation
including
that has been...
the international stations?
Yes. But yeah. So we can, perform imaging of this bridge down to probably 10 arc second resolution without any problem. The image that you have seen in science are 80 arc second resolution, so very low resolution. So this image will allow for the first time to see the brightness distribution of this gigantic bridge. At the same time, there are ongoing follow-up by many groups at higher frequency. So if they will find a bridge that is smooth or whatever, also at gigahertz or few gigahertz, also in the next 10 years with SKA eventually, well, the model is wrong. So there are clear tests to do this. This is similar to what we did for ultra-steep spectrum radio halos. So we predicted the existence of this large number of steep spectrum radio halos. Apparently they exist, but let's see, yeah.
A question for you about the diffusion coefficient of these cosmic ray electrons. Mm. Can you constrain it? Like, can the fact that you have the radio observations that you do, can you place an upper limit on it so that they don't all escape even farther, or a lower limit so they actually get there from the...
Yeah, that's a good point. Essentially, there are easy way to do this, because the DPPs are connected to the mu mu, and so with the spatial diffusion coefficient. So you predict with this kind of acceleration rate, you predict a D in terms of diffusion coefficient, spatial diffusion coefficient of the order of 10 to the 30 centimeters squared per second. So you can calculate which is the diffusion. There is nothing incompatible so far with observations. Then let's see, in the next 10 years they will kill us, but hopefully not.
No questions?
What about protons?
Okay, so I was waiting for your question about protons. No, I was praying for you or Christoph about protons. But yeah, so in this formalism, we have both protons and electrons. So let's explain this, because this is a formalism where essentially you have the kind of Fokker-Planck equation for electrons, protons, the turbulence, and you reaccelerate also your protons in the system, generate secondary particles, inject secondary particles in the electrons, with all this complicated system. But when you go to the result, This is the result. Essentially, what you can see is that if you use or not the protons in your system, you go from the solid model with protons to the dashed model without protons. So the feeling is that protons here are not important, and the reason is simple, because these are very dilute or low density regions. So proton-proton collision is less effective than in galaxy clusters. In the center of galaxy clusters, we typically use also protons to reaccelerate secondaries, blah, 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 to generate radio halos. Here, there is no strong need. Of course, the test of the presence of the protons is gamma rays. We have also gamma rays emission from this bridge, from this kind of models, but are factor 20 below the sensitivity of Fermi, because it's, but yeah, in principle, one day or the other.
Even close, even if you look at the nearest of possible objects.
Yes, this is zero, this system is redshift 007. Is the big, is a, I mean, this is a, something that I want to follow up also with Christoph's point. No? That Christoph asked, is your simulation complicated like the system? So this system is really a strange system because it's the biggest nearby pre-merger, but by far, it's really a monster. So this is a kind of coma cluster versus another coma cluster that are colliding at a redshift 0.07 with a velocity of the order of 3,000 kilometers per second, and the overdensity of the system is 10, 12, 15 times the overdensity that you would expect in general. So it's really a monster. So it is not surprising that there is a lot of turbulence there, like we see in simulations. So yeah, the system is very... It's a very strange system. There are only few of these systems in the universe. So the challenge is to see if there are other systems that can be detected with radio.
More questions? Okay, so let's move on. And thank you again.
Thank you.